Welcome to Small World with Bazooka Joe. March 30th.
This is Bazooka Joe, and you're listening to The Small World, where we interview people from all walks of life, from all over the planet. And this is a special segment called Shadow Crew. Communications technology has indeed made the world a smaller place, but there is a price to pay for it. And that's where Shadow Crew comes into play. So we're talking to El, who we spoke with 2 weeks ago. He alluded to his involvement with the Russian mafia. And of course, El's got a very long and sordid past. So I thought we'd go back and talk about that for a little bit. Tell me how you get involved working for the Russian mob.
Well, through my contacts at Shadow Crew, it was just kind of, you know, it was there. There was the American side, and then there was the Russian side. And the Americans, you know, all they had, or the English side, as they call it, all they had back then was just making novelty identification, dumpster diving, a few small-time hacks here and there, and then a lot of shit-talking. And the Russian side was more effective, business-like. They were workaholics. To them, money didn't make any difference. It was just the work. You know, they could pile up millions of dollars and it wouldn't make any difference. They'd still be pounding away at the keyboard, you know, 14 hours a day. Well, I wanted to meet up with them, you know, because all my life I'd heard about the Russian mafia. I've heard about how they are. They're ruthless, cold-blooded, effective, and they make a lot of money. And that intrigued me. So, you know, I became involved with them through Shadow Crew. And through my activities on Shadow Crew, I was able to meet a lot of the top guys.
Just take one brief second to explain to the listeners what Shadow Crew is.
Shadow Crew was a criminal empire that was actually a website, and it was designed for the sole purpose of crime, the sole purpose of fraud, whether that be identity theft, credit card fraud, bank fraud, any kind of fraud, eBay fraud, PayPal fraud, you know, you name it, they were in it. So that's what Shadow Crew was until the FBI and the Secret Service mounted an operation that lasted for what they say is a year, but it's actually more than a year. And so then they finally took them out on October the 28th, which they called the 9/11 of the fraud world.
So it was through Shadow Crew that it enabled you to establish contacts with the Russian mafia. So you approached them first. They didn't approach you.
No, I mean, it was sort of mutual, you know. I was a huge talker back then, as far as writing articles and giving my side of, you know, of the criminal life to other criminals that hadn't done as much or even people that, were noobs at it. So I established my reputation just through writing, you know, and the experiences in life that I had. They came to me, and I kind of came back to them. It was sort of a mutual type situation.
So when did you first actively do business with them? What sort of jobs did you do?
One job I had was with BB, who later turned out to be the biggest, literally biggest guy in Russia for fraud. And we call him BB. I met him, and I was in a real hard way in life financially, and you know, I was being dragged in a lot of directions by the government and by other criminals and by people, you know, that were pretending to be criminals who worked with the government, and all in sort of a nature to get rid of me and to take me out. And so, you know, I ended up in a huge carding operation with them where we were carding back then, of course. This was, you know, literally the first time that English and Russians had started working together in furtherance of one purpose, which was fraud. So, you know, I ended up in an operation with a guy, and we did, in 1 week, we did $50,000 worth of products, merchandise, laptops, and plasma screens, and Rolex watches, and Audemars watches, and Patek Philippe's $35,000 watches, types, those type of things that would get carded to a drop.
So how did you get those things?
Well, I opened up an office, which is called a drop, you know, and you just, you know, they can be anywhere from mailboxes, et cetera, now the UPS store, that becoming a little bit more rare, to, you know, empty apartments, empty houses, anything that a shipper will ship to. And I ended up doing a little bit of a higher class deal where you open up an office, and because in an office situation, especially a busy one, you know, you get a lot of shipments and nobody pays attention. But in mailboxes and UPS-type stores, you know, empty apartments, you take risks that they won't deliver. And, you know, or that the deliveries are set up and they're watching the house when you go to do it, you know, when you go to pick up your stuff. That's always the risk. I ended up in a, you know, in a pretty large operation, considered large back then because it involved me and another character by the name of MacGyver, who were amongst the five biggest guys in the fraud scene. And MacGyver happened to be working for the Secret Service out of Denver at the time. And he was, of course, one of the major players in Shadow Crew. So it was kind of a twisted thing. We all ended up in the same operation in Seattle, and we all ended up getting busted during that operation.
How did you get all the merchandise, such as the watches and the laptops?
Well, it was easy, you know. The Russians would, you know, they had online access to the bank accounts. And so, you know, they're in their bank account right then watching them. And they watch the charges on their credit cards through their online, you know, statement, what gets off, you know, or authorized and what doesn't. And then they make a call, you know, they get on ICQ or whatever, and they tell you, hey, you know, I just ordered this. They go to a website, they order an expensive item online, they have it shipped. And you, the drop, if you're, you know, working a good operation, you'll make the verification phone calls to the company you just ordered from, alerting them to the fact that yes, you did just order from them, and this is supposed to put them off their guard, which it does and did. And that's how the merchandise would then go out. It would get delivered to the drop address because we, or the Russians, had changed the billing address online, which, you know, is once you have online account access to someone's bank account, all you have to do is just change the billing address on the credit card to whatever drop address you have, and then wait 3 to 5 days before you order anything over the net online, because they use a system called AVS, which is Address Verification Services, and they match the first 3 digits of your billing address and your zip code, as well as now even your email that you have listed on the card.
So just so I'm clear on this, then you have the Russian mafia, and through online they've gotten a hold of people's credit card information, which you then, or they are, purchasing things on the phone and over the internet with the credit card information. Is that correct?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, you know, it got shipped, and, you know, once it got shipped, we go pick up. And anyway, we all ended up getting busted, and I ended up doing some time. MacGyver got out the next day, went on to participate in quite a number of other arrests where he walked out of every one of them. And, you know, when I came out, you know, I got business with another Russian, because my guy, as soon as I got out, my guy got busted, and one of the biggest busts in Russian history over fraud. And so I ended up, you know, having to deal with another guy by the name of Keynes, who was a pretty big character in the field. Still is, actually.
So let me ask you, for both of those gentlemen, do you happen to know what gangs they ran with? There's several of them. There's one, Soltyevskaya, I think that's how you pronounce it. That's one of the biggest Russian mafia gangs. I just wanted to know if maybe you knew what gangs they might be with.
The thing is with the online fraud, this is sort of a new thing, you know, for the actual gangs that run around and do harder core ops like murders and prostitution rings and stuff like that. The fraud world hasn't really merged as of yet. It is merging as we speak with these hardcore groups. But at that time and throughout, you know, that time, the fraud side of crime in Russia had not been completely allied with a specific hardcore gang. And the thing is a lot of these guys over there, when you meet them and you do business with them, they don't really let you into what they're about. You know, that's one of the things about being online. It's being anonymous. And you don't ask a lot of questions of the other guy, because you know, or you hope, of course today it's different, but back then you hoped that the guy wasn't a law enforcement officer. You know, you thought you were dealing with a real Russian guy, and, you know, that was the way you did business. But later on it's come to pass, and this is knowledge that's definitely there, is that the government ended up running Shadow Crew crew for a long period of time, and thus they knew every operation that was going on. And law enforcement does initiate a lot of operations on their own. I mean, they can pretend to be a seller of goods. They can pretend to be, you know, part of another, you know, gang that's doing stuff and get you involved in an operation just to identify you and bust you. But back then, a lot of people didn't really think about those things. You know, it was like this was a new brave world for everybody to be public about their operations and what they do. And they were just right out in the middle. People coming out going, hey, look, I got novelties, and, you know, or I got counterfeit money, or I've got this, you know, credit card deal, or this identity theft deal going on right in public. We did several, you know, high-profile hacks back in the days. You know, Starbucks hacks.
What was the Starbucks hack?
Starbucks is where, you know, that when they first came out with their little cards, their Starbucks cards, you could load them with a credit card for up to $200, and they didn't do any AVS checking. It was just really simple. You could go on with just a number and a CVV2, which is the, you know, three-digit number on the back of the card, and just load $200 onto a card. You can go pick up these cards for $1, man, you made $199 for everyone you filled up. You could fill up hundreds, if not thousands, of them. And then you could go out and you could buy the baristas for $400 or $500 at the store with your cards and turn them on eBay and make a decent profit. As a matter of fact, the baristas that were on eBay during that time, a large percentage of them were just specifically from that Starbucks operation. Yeah, people just put it in public, you know, they didn't care. You know, they felt that they were these warriors that couldn't be found, they couldn't be stopped, they couldn't, you know, nothing could happen to them.
Prior to being busted for having the office set up for the Russian mafia, had you ever been in prison before?
Yeah, I've been down that road all my life, you know. Yeah, since I was 11 years old. Yeah, I've been in this life for over 30 years and dedicated a lot of suffering to it. So, yeah, I have been, in answer to your question, many times.
So when you go in for a crime such as identity fraud, is it like minimum security prison? I'm not really familiar with this aspect.
You know, the thing is it depends. The feds often don't want to touch a case unless it's, you know, about $1 million written on it or more. And, you know, they don't want to touch a case of $500,000, $200,000. They will. You know, if some noob in the office is, you know, wanting to make headway with his boss, I guess. But mostly, you know, they'll leave it to the state to prosecute you. And the state is a lot different than the feds. Granted, you get less time. Granted, there is parole in the state system. They don't, you know, get as tough on you with fines and massive, you know, supervision deals after you get out. But, you know, the feds do. But oftentimes the feds won't take a case. And when they do take a case, you know, the funny part about it is they give you less time, really, in truth, first offense, than they do in a state case. I've seen state cases, fraud cases, get 5-10 years on a first offense when, you know, a fraud case in federal for the first offense gets 6 months house arrest, if that, you know. So, but the problem is some of these guys end up in the state, and that's worse because state prison doesn't discriminate, you know. They don't discriminate where they put you. If you're young and you're a youthful offender and your first time, it's going to be rough, you know. And even if you're an old-timer, it's even rough. It's rough no matter what. So
So I take it you've been in state prison then?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. So, yeah, you know, I've been down that road, you know, not always willingly and certainly not for a lot of money half the time, but I've been down that road for a long time.
As far as some of the stuff we talked to tonight, what ways can people do to protect themselves from identity theft, or at least make themselves less susceptible to it?
Change their names every month.
It's that bad, huh?
Yeah, it's that bad. If I knew your name before we finished this conversation and when we started it, I would have known everything about you. I would have known every relative you had, every friend that was associated with you, your neighbors, where you lived, your neighbors, where they lived, what your credit report was, what their credit report was, what income neighborhood you lived in, how much money you made, what your driver's license number is, what car you drive, what plates you have on your car, who's it registered to. And I could have probably had a novelty if I'd have had some you know, equipment. I would have had a novelty made with my picture on it and your name on it prior to the ending of this conversation.
Do you think that'll ever change, or you think that's just an aspect of communications technology that we're never going to be able to get around?
Shit. It is communications technology. It's technology that's killing us, you know. It's technology that's killing us. But it's also the fact that, you know, we have a lot less human interaction with people. People are used to dealing with computers. They're used to dealing with voice prompts. They're used to giving away their precious info for nothing to some unknown person on the phone calling them, asking them, you know, a few questions. And the thing is that the criminal element in the fraud world is bigger than drugs. It's more organized than drugs. It's decentralized. It's not all, you know, oh, I busted this gang and now it's over. I mean, you could bust 10 and they'll open 20 tomorrow. You know, there's no way that they're not going to take advantage of our information. No way they're not going to do it. They're going to see every person as a potential target to make money off of. And I don't care if it's 2,000, 10,000, 100,000, a million, it doesn't make any difference. And eventually people, because we rely on this technology and credit bureaus to make or break us in this life, eventually it's going to break everybody in that world that depends on it. So you want the truth? The truth is you're already screwed. You don't have any protections. And if I was a criminal and I drove by your house, I think about you before I hit the stop sign down at the street and decide whether I wanted to take every dollar you had. You can't stop that person. You just can't. Now, granted, we've got a lot of really bad things happening in the world, so people don't always think about it. But the truth is that we are in a dangerous area. We are vulnerable to losing what we worked hard for 20 and 30 years. And we are vulnerable to that right now. We have been vulnerable to it in the past, and it's getting worse, not better.
We've opened up a Pandora's box. Well, Al, thanks for your time, and I'm looking forward to our next interview when you tell me more about communications technology and identity theft and ATM theft and whatever nefarious doings that are out there in the shadow crew world. We hope you tune back in. You're listening to Small World. Everyone's got a story to tell. I'd like to hear yours. Please email me at smallworldpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
This episode of Small World has been sponsored by Mind Tricks Clothing. Mind Tricks, urban street clothing, a fusion of Eastern wisdom and Western fashion. Visit the Mind Tricks website at mindtrix.com.